Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
My wife's in a union. When COVID first started, they were doing like the union meetings, like virtually, obviously.
She's in a union with you for her whole life.
Yeah, that's true. Marital union. And the Teamsters. The Teamsters are involved. It's fucked up.
Boys here, the internet's number one podcast, where I, Peter O'Donoghue, do a book report comparing it to a video game at the request of people on Discord. And you know that is true, because that is very specific. And I am joined by...
Ethan Palmer. Can I just say, the listeners obviously didn't hear this, but Jamie's count-in for the episode was Omega Alpha Beta, which is Z-A-B. Was okay. his count in for Peter to start yep. the recording here.
It was a 1, 2, 3, but I started at the end of the alphabet and it had a wrap around.
And and a 1 and a 2 and a 26-1-2.
Yeah, huh? Exactly.
That's Jamie's count.
We do the wrap around countdown here on this show. It's back from the 60s, back in the studio with the Beatles.
Yeah. Let me introduce myself, who came last, but in my alphabet, that's first. James Miller.
James the Omega Man.
Yeah. When are we going to get to Omega Mail? Is my question.
Oh, man. I'm watching this streamer kind of like lose his mind lately, because he's getting like whatever pilled is all this alpha talk and everything. And
alpha is the classic. Alpha's red pill. But now there's like, is he... like black pilled is like Sigma or some
Sigma,
shit. Like I have no idea.
Sigma and Alpha are all kind of wrapped up in the same weird, gross thing right now.
I didn't think those things had a correlation. I thought like red pilled was like you're leaning right, like politically was.
I think generally that's true.
They bleed together. Like the alpha talk is like, well, my ideal relationship is like I go out and I like catch the fish and I kill it and I present it to my wife, who stays at home and prepares it for me and cleans or something.
Sure. Yeah. Where's her bonnet? But at the same time, she better get a job, because my Burger King can't sustain us. Okay.
Like... I don't know. Internet's a weird place, and it's way too easy to
think. Say it every time. We say it more than anything. Internet was a mistake.
Yeah. A lot of good came out of it, but ultimately more bad. It's tragic.
TikTok echo chambers aren't great either now, too. Because like, if you do get stuck on an idea, your whole world, like the whole like globe that you see, will be the exact views you're looking for, kind of thing. But
that's it. Yeah, it's not even the internet that was the mistake. Like, if it was just Wikipedia, you know what I mean, like it'd be fine. If it was just like an encyclopedia that anybody could kind of add to, and there'd be like all this like beautiful information, or if there was Twitch, but like you weren't allowed to talk, like you could show gameplay, like that's fine.
Hot those fools. We still got that.
No hot dog pools.
Oh. No, I heard no, that too.
No dog internet pools, porn. Hot tub pools.
I heard dog as well.
Man, imagine the smell of that place. And you come to a hot dog pool, just the evaporating hot dog water.
Just knowing you, Jamie, and I guess your style of memes in the over the past year and a half. Like, I heard hot dog water or hot dog pool, and I did not stutter. Like, I did not hesitate for a second. I was like, yeah, he just means hot dog pools. That's like the new meta, I guess, or whatever.
No,
like,
hot tubs and pools where it's a thing on Twitch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, we can be your own echo chamber, because this part here is, before we get into the episode, this is our last one before Montreal Comic Con, when we're going to be there on July 9th, 2022. So if you want to come to that or show up to the mini Boys Con afterwards, get your tickets or your gas now, however you're going to get there. After tax, I saw the Saturday ticket, it's like $50 Canadian, so it's not even like ludicrously expensive if you just want to go for one day. I personally will be there Sunday as well, but not with Ethan and Jamie. I'm just going to help hold down the fort for the Squared Idea publisher sort of things. And also, like, if you're in the area and don't want to come to Comic-Con, just like I would suggest DMing one of us, just so it doesn't get buried in like a different conversation.
I think we'll do an announcement probably, so it'll be in the announcements channel on Discord. If you're not on Discord, you might want to get on Discord if you're going to try and link up with us, because that's probably where most of the information is going to be coming from. It's going to be what we're calling it, BoyCon. I don't know what time Comic-Con ends or what time it starts. Something that we should probably be aware of, but
we're going to be there at 3. That was the message I sent to you guys yesterday.
Yeah, so I think around 8 or 9 we'll probably meet up at Brewtopia is I think the plan far.
Yeah. I know we're not like huge yet, but it's probably general good practice to not put out locations of where we're going to be, or I don't know.
We're literally doing a convention though.
Yeah, I know, like conventions, I don't know. I feel like there's some weirdos on the internet. So that one guy who calls us woke on YouTube is just going to like call in a bomb threat to Brutopia or something. But,
don't give me any ideas.
Well, let him do. Let him end up on an FBI watch list. Like, I don't care.
Yeah, okay, fuck, who cares?
We're not John Lennon big yet, let's say, okay?
No, yeah, that's fair. People do say where they're going.
Yeah. Plus, if you want to meet us, that's you got to know.
Yeah, if we get enough traction this time, then we'll do like a regularly scheduled boycott and calling your save your bomb threats for that whatever convention center that's at.
You know what I mean? If we can get enough bomb threats, we'll do these more.
Okay, that's a joke, FBI. That's a joke. Okay.
Let's start with like people shipping us first. Let's start with some gay fanfic, and we can move into bomb threats when we get even bigger than that. Like that's like the how big you are on the internet sort of thing.
Right.
So today's episode is about, as you can see by the title, Heart of Darkness and Spec Ops The Line. This was requested on our Discord, which is linked below, by patron Papa Bray, who just re-upped and increased his subscription, so thank you to him. By Sparkles69, Commodore Turtle, and say it with me, is Hondola.
Hondola.
Hondola. Yeah.
Hondola.
I think Bray asked for us to do an impression of him, too, but I'm not very good at those. Are you guys...
Six pissed? I don't know.
That's a good phrase.
I'm just out on my dick. Yeah. Out on my dick, having a sun soak. I'm an electrician. I fly sometimes. Well, I don't know.
That's pretty good.
And also hello to new patron Benny Martinez. So if you want to join the likes of these guys, that link is in the description as well if you want to pay for content. There's bonus
that's
audio.
A great name.
It is, yeah. It does sound like
real or otherwise. That's a great name.
Yeah. And then finally, before we get into the evils of Empire, I'd like to wish everybody a belated and unrelated Happy Canada Day and Happy Independence Day.
I thought you were going to wish everybody a happy your own birthday.
Happy Peter's birthday.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
Happy my birthday, everybody.
I'm 31 now. The oldest. I get to enjoy, like, whatever, 7 weeks of being the oldest. Basically, so I get to bully Ethan and Jamie.
Oh, dude, I'm not looking forward to all the noogies and wedgies this weekend.
Oh, man.
I'm gonna fucking every noogie I get, I'm gonna twist Jamie's nipples so hard. That was the younger brother.
Yeah,
come on. I saw you just a couple weekends ago. They're still all tired out.
So I guess I'll check. I know you had mentioned it already, but have either one of you read Heart of Darkness and or played Spec Ops The Line, or tangentially, which I barely will talk about ever again, seen Apocalypse Now?
I've not seen Apocalypse Now. I played maybe the first two chapters of Spec Ops The Line, and I read a graphic novel adaptation of Heart of Darkness, which I don't think did the original story justice, but it was the broad strokes, I guess.
Yeah, the spark notes, basically.
I've seen Apocalypse Now, like, semi-recently. Like, since I got my new TV over the winter. I've watched it on my new TV, so I'm kind of fresh on that one, at least. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Do you remember what happens?
Yeah, there's Charlie Sheen, and he's like waiting in a. This is the bit that we did last week, where I just explained Pokemon.
Yeah.
And he's waiting in a room, and he wants to be called out to war, but he's not getting called out to war. So he's like drinking and smoking a bunch, and then he like breaks a glass or something, cuts his hand all open, and then like on the most hungover, like fucked up day, that's when he gets called in, and they're gonna send him out to find the king of who used to be American, but now he's flipped and he's turning people. He's like a cult leader out in the woods, And
yeah, okay, that is the broad strokes.
Okay, yeah,
that is Heart of Darkness from what I remember too. So
yeah, he's like became disillusioned with like why they're out there and stuff, and then and you kind of by the end kind of you're like, yeah, I get it, I get why this guy is kind of turned against you, the American.
Yeah, I, yeah, like the guy who's like portrayed as the bad guy who and this is kind of a spoiler, I guess, but. We're going to talk about it, I assume. In the comic book, he was like portrayed as like a dying old man, I guess, who was like living among the tribes people. And like, I do think he like was twisted from what I recall in a lot of ways and was like a pretty like menacing character. Like they gave him like a really like death's head look. So he looked very evil. But I do think the, as we'll always say on this show, the corporations behind it all are the bad guys always, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we'll get into who the actual villains are.
King Leopold III.
Yeah, King Leopold II. Very
the second, is it? Yeah. Okay. I think the third was the really bad one, but they're all bad.
Yeah, I mean, from what we're going to talk about, like, I'll just get into it. I mean, you guys can make your own judgment call, but I don't think it's going to be a positive one. So Heart of Darkness is a novella written by Joseph Conrad and was published in 1899. Like a lot of old writing, it was serialized at first and then came out as like a full compendium, like a full book in 1902. So if you listen to the audiobook like I did, there's like chapter one, part one, chapter one, part two, chapter two, part one, all that shit. It's kind of sectioned into pieces based on when it would have been released in some old timey magazine for like people who could write, basically.
Oh, just like old timey music, like Usher's Confessions part two. From the mid-90s.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Also about the evils of colonialism.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I've never heard it. So in the list of adaptations, it's, yeah.
And these are my confessions. Something about having a girl on the side, but she's got one on the way. There's something. It's very confusing. There's like a pregnant lady, but also a side bitch, and there, yeah. it's a classic love triangle.
Having it, he's saying about having a plantation, I think, in Central Africa at some point, and
I don't
think
Usher's saying about that one.
So the story revolves around a man named Charles Marlowe, who at the beginning of the novel is sitting with some of other men on a yacht on the River Thames in London, waiting for the tide to turn. They're kind of just like bumming around. One guy's fucking around with some dominoes. And then he starts to tell the other men about the time he had worked for a Belgian trading company, where he was a captain of a small steam-powered riverboat traveling from the Atlantic coast down a river to the middle of the continent. Marlowe specifies that he chose this journey since when he was a boy, he thought like the, what he called like the dark parts of the map were fascinating. And when he was young, so in, you know, like the mid 19th century, a lot of the internal continent had not been explored by Europeans and therefore not mapped out for where a child living in England or in London specifically would be able to like see something like that. This setup is actually based on a real experience that the author Conrad had when he was younger. When he was 32, he assumed command of a steamship when he was working in the Congo Free State. And when the ship's captain got sick with some horrible jungle disease, like some kind of pox or like that catfish that sleeps in your pee hole, he ended up assuming command of the riverboat.
Whoa.
Yeah, I can't come into work today. I got dick fish.
Yeah, I got a dick fish.
I don't know. I played the first Pokemon game, and all you got to do is go into the captain's cabin and rub his back, and then he feels good again. And then
The captain of the SSN has come down with the vapors, so you have to that's the point of that.
a back rub will cure you of your dick fish, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And then it'll teach you how to cut.
He eventually cuts his own penis off, the captain of the SSN, to cure himself of the dick fish.
Oh, that's the subtext.
Yeah. You rub his back and you give him the strength to do what he didn't have, like the strength he didn't have to do what he needs to do a moment ago, which is cut off his own penis because there's a fish living inside it.
True. Yeah. Okay. And then
that fish is basically useless, but if you shield level it, it turns into Gyarados eventually.
Okay, cool. So as Ash, you watch him cut off his own penis, learn from that how to cut yourself, then you go to meet Lieutenant Surge and rummage through his trash bins.
Garbage cans.
While not trying to get electrocuted. Okay.
You don't have to go to Surge right away. You can go wherever you want.
You can grind in that grass patch. You know, it's like, but I mean, like you get a Gyarados out of it.
You can go like all the way to Celadon, can't you? I think you can.
Yeah, you can. Well, I think you need Flash. You don't need Flash, but it's easier to get Flash. Like, you can only get Flash if you have the gym badge. And
Yeah.
It's very hard to get through that.
Unless you're using
I had
like
the dark
map
part of that map memorized, so I could navigate through the Belgian Congo.
Yeah, I mean, on Game Boy Color, if you just held your eyes close enough to the screen, you could see the level. Like, it
oh,
was
really?
Just the darkness was turned way down, but it wasn't like just like black. So
that's so funny.
Yeah. So I used to get through it like that.
So a little bit of other real world trivia here. I looked up the Congo Free State, and as you may have guessed by the name, it was indeed not a free state whatsoever, just like any democratic and or people's republic you've ever read about.
Yeah, that's it.
If your country's got a, I don't know, a title, that title is a complete lie. It is.
Yeah, that's the white man showed up. This is me guessing what the Congo Free State was. The white man showed up. Saw all these, you know, different tribes, you know, quote unquote, Joseph Conrad savages living in the way they'd lived for generations. And they basically said, like, you guys are slaves to not having access to, you know, a market, not having access to water. So we're going to give you the freedom that is capitalism. And you guys are not going to be able to really participate in it. You're just going to be like tools to facilitate it for us, basically.
Pretty much.
It's very much very work will set you free, right?
You guys can click on the first spoiler tag in chat and just see the picture there. The name actually has two misnomers in it. It was not free and it was not a state. Where you were kind of close, the truth is actually much worse than just being part of an empire. It was actually just a sizable chunk of the African continent that was just owned by the King of Belgium, Leopold II. And to be clear, it was not a part of the Kingdom of Belgium. It was just his separately owned, in quotes, private property.
Wow.
He lost
it's like
life.
It's like kings of England have like their parks or whatever. There's some story about some princess of England who like there was this like King's Park or whatever near some royal estate that like was always open to the public. And then there was like one princess who was like, no, I just want it for like me and my friends. But this was like when they had like a prime minister and like elected officials basically. So she like built a wall with like these toll booths around it to like keep the peasants out basically. And the government said like, no, we're paying for it. So that's illegal. Like you're not allowed to do that anymore. Like it's just in name. But it somehow ended up like she still like the royal family still owned the gates, like the turnstiles that let you in. So they left them locked. So people had to get like ladders and you could like use a ladder to climb over the wall into the park and you could use the park legally. You just couldn't use the doors.
So stupid.
But if it was a country, and not just any country, like a big country, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Republic of Congo or the Democratic Republic of Congo?
The Congo Free State at this time. It's like a big, it looks like it's about, I'd say like 15% of the continent. So the loss of life within the Free State is pretty much incalculable at this point because, like, it was hard to travel even for, like, a European country, but also, like, they were not keeping records of people who got sick through contact with, like, smallpox and were, you know, like, criminals, in quotes, that they may have punished or something. So it's really...
I'm sorry, Peter. I posted a picture. I looked up how big it is. It is as big as France, Germany, Italy, Switzerland, Belgium, Holland, Austria, half of the Czech Republic, and all of England combined, basically.
Yeah.
Wow. With a bunch of water.
Yeah.
All of the North Sea, most of the Baltic Sea, a little chunk of the Mediterranean in there.
Yeah.
It's very big.
It's an unreasonable amount of land, even for a king, I would say, personally.
How do you even chart it off, like, at the time? You know what I mean? Like, how does, like, a Belgian explorer find it and say, like, I'm going to give this as a gift to my king? And, like, you're pointing at something, like, 1,000 kilometers across, and you're just like, yeah, for the next 1,000 kilometers, that's his. You know what I mean? Like, don't you have to, like, at least see it to, like, claim it? I don't know.
I don't know, man.
Plant flags all the way? Like,
I didn't look into the history of it, because it's, like, we're, like, it's relevant here just to know, like, because this is where Heart of Darkness is set. Even though it's never specified in the novel, it's just like, yeah. And then like, also here's some fucked up trivia about just like the biggest thing I've ever seen that some guy just had as private property. Technically.
Wow.
So what's pretty crazy about this one is that the conditions within the state were so bad that international pressure forced Leopold to give up his private chunk of the continent and absorb it into the Empire, turning it into the Belgian Congo. like, this is pre-World War One international pressure, where, like, the Ottomans, the English, and the Germans were just like, hey, man, what you're doing there is fucked up.
Yeah.
Well, like, wow. That's how bad it was that, like, the places that started the first World War were just like, you've taken it too far, Leo. We gotta rein it in a little bit here. Like, we like rubber as much as the next empire, but maybe we could slow down a bit.
That answers your question, I guess, Ethan. Like, you don't need a fence around your yard if it's just so awful to be there that nobody wants to be there.
I mean, it's awful. It's awful because of what they were doing, though.
Right.
Yeah. You know, Leopold II or Leopold III, or like these people that we were referencing earlier, are like some of history's greatest monsters. They're up there with, you know, the Adolf Hitler, the guy in Virginia who was like fucking up all the laws at the time.
This guy in Virginia?
What?
I don't remember his name, but there's a, like, back around the time that Hitler was big, Virginia was doing a lot of fucked up racist shit, right? As Virginia, so like he was on the Nazi mailing list. Like, he had reached out to them in like 1935 and being like, oh, I want to see like all the things that you're doing because I want to help, or all the things you're doing with the Jews because I want to do that with black people in Virginia. Basically, he like repealed interracial marriage. Interracial marriage was illegal in Virginia until 1967. Like, wow. We were two years from putting a man on the moon.
Yeah.
And they had repealed all that. So, like, just like all these, like, terrible, terrible people, I guess, the Leopolds are up there with them.
Happy July 4th, brother.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful, spacious land.
So, like I said, in the novel, Conrad never specifies where in Africa he was. However, the fact he was working for, the character Marlowe is working for Belgian ivory traders taking a steamboat down a river in Central Africa is just like, okay, yeah, like, tell me you're in the Free State of Congo without you telling me you're in the Free State of Congo, basically.
Mm. Yeah.
Joseph Theodor Conrad Korzenowski, his disdain for empire started at an early age, since his native Poland for most of his life had been overtaken and chopped up by the Habsburgs, the Russians, and the Prussians. So Joseph Conrad is his pen name, because obviously his Polish name is too hard.
When I was in Poland, my boss referred to them, and when he's talking about the history and stuff, he's like, yeah, we've had a lot of bad neighbors, is what he says.
Yeah.
And Poland gets stuck in the middle of a whole bunch of stuff, huh?
Poland and Ireland are like two places I always forget have had a bad go of it, just because of the countries around them that just needed a whipping boy for some reason. Like, when someone needed someone to starve, they just flip a coin between the two of those places. They wanted people to starve, but they didn't want to have to, like, travel to do it, right?
Yeah.
So, exactly. Like, choose somebody local.
Poland is so, like, safe, too. It had, like, the second lowest crime rates next to, I think, Japan or something. But
really?
Yeah, yeah. Everything's, like, so chill there, but they, like, has been so turbulent in the past.
Yeah,
fucked up. Not. I don't know about Congo turbulent, but yeah.
I hope not. I doubt it, but I hope not. So, after arriving in Africa, Marlowe gets to repairing his steamboat and like starts lightly criticizing the behavior of the Europeans at the first river station. There's three river stations that he goes to, which is just like the fancy huts that the Europeans set up for themselves. As like the deeper you get into the Congo itself.
Right, and in the video game, that's the you climb them and then jump down into a bale of hay, and you unlock the map for the next area. Or
yeah, of course,
yeah, okay, exactly.
Cool.
He observes many African workers who are chained together, and sarcastically notes to himself that the manager's calling these people criminals and prisoners is not true whatsoever. So this is like, even at the beginning of the novel, Conrad is through Marlowe is critical of the behavior of the Europeans. On the African continent. Later on down the river, he runs into a Russian station manager who refers to heads that he has just lined up outside of the station on pikes as rebels, which Marlowe once again, like, straight up calls out, well, like, in his internal monologue calls out, it's like, that's fake news, dude. Those people were not rebels. Like,
yeah,
that is
exactly.
Just a nickname you gave to somebody that you had to kill because they were in the way for some reason.
I mean, rebels because you, again, they were living here, you know, successfully, peacefully or otherwise, but living here successfully, probably quite peacefully, relatively speaking to when you showed up.
Yeah.
And then you showed up, through a revolution, and when people were like, no, we want to keep doing things the old way, you're like, well, that's a revolutionary thought, my guy. Like, what the hell? You can't just revolution my revolution. Get out of here. You're a rebel.
Yeah. It's like hardly a revolution when it's like European colonization. I wouldn't call the germs and the guns that you use to be quite a revolution. It's much more of a hostile takeover than anything. And then anybody who is just like, I don't like this, then that guy's a rebel who's inciting. Yeah.
Like, I just mean to say, like, you've come in and turned people's thoughts on their, like, the way people live on its head.
Yeah.
And you're clearly, like, raping and pillaging. And, you know, when people are like, well, no, we want to go back to the old way, then to call them a rebel is, like, absolutely asinine. Like, what do you mean? They want to just keep living their life the way that they were living it.
Yeah.
Which did not negatively impact you at all. Like, they're halfway across the world. Like...
Yeah, you just like stumbled upon this place and decided you wanted their rubber, basically. Yeah. Like, I mean, they weren't really using it, so we might as well. And anybody who wants to stop us from taking way more rubber than we need, I mean, that's revolutionary, dude.
Oh yeah.
So
industrial revolutionary, right?
Yeah, yeah. While on site, Marlo keeps hearing people talk about this incredible man named Mr. Kurtz. And a quick aside here, listening to the audiobook in the year of our Dr. Peterson 2022, the way the men at the stations talk up Kurtz feels really similar. Like, he's so smart, man. You just got to read some of the stuff he's written. It'll change your life, Marlo. He's got all these ideas, man. Like, he's so fucking cool and smart, like, straight up. Like, we find out later that after Marlo has returned to Europe, the people back home, like, truly admire him. As stating that he's like a genius and he's an artist and that he should be a politician. And like, I really don't want to go for like super, super low, like low hanging lefty fruit here. But Kurtz really, really, really does, at least now, read like an amalgamation of Elon Musk and Jordan Peterson. like, I know it's just like, that's like the easiest joke for some liberal like me to go to is just like the currently trendy bad guys. But like, they really do talk to him. Just like, Kurtz is such a cool guy. You got to read some of his stuff, man. That now you'll understand. It's crazy that this was written in like 1899.
He figured out how to make a lot of money and then also like oppress people really successfully. It's like, what? Like, why are you analyzing that?
What's the similarities though? Is he like promising by like 1930 that the white man can live in Africa or something?
Like, no, I mean, they can already live there. Clearly there's a colony. It's just like the way they talk about like, oh, his writing and his ideas. He's like very much like just like this philosopher. Like the way people talk about Elon Musk is just like, man, he's gonna take us to fucking Mars, man. Isn't that fucking cool? Like, they admire all these dumb ideas that he's never acted on or like could possibly be. Like, they had that guy in like the fucking like the Pepsi Man outfit, and there were like people reporting on how like he wants to build a robot, and it's like he didn't even have a prototype or like a CGI model. He had like a guy in a zip up latex.
Yeah, I know.
Suit.
He's a child. I think Elon Musk is like was a loser when he was a kid. Like I think he was probably bullied a lot. His whole shtick is like walk into companies and steal other people's idea, and then like immediately fire anybody who would say that it wasn't his idea. That's his thing, right? That's how he made his billions.
Yeah.
Can I misquote, or not misquote, can I accurately, out of context, quote Jordan Peterson real quick?
Of course.
There was a recent interview where he called himself the dumb person smart guy.
I did see that.
Yeah. I was like, damn, that's an accurate description of yourself, my guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, we're living through his, Kurtz eventually does go crazy. And now that we're living through the timeline of Jordan Peterson's second, like, on Twitter psychotic episode is just like, all right, cool. These guys have a lot in common. But yeah, it's very much just like, you do find out, like, I'm not spoiling a 123-year-old book by saying like, yeah, Kurtz wasn't all he was made up to be. Like, people just like played him up because his reputation preceded him sort of thing, which is the same for like Elon Musk or Jordan Peterson, where it's just like on the surface level, like, yeah, work hard, take responsibility for your shit is like fine advice. But as soon as you like scratch under the surface, you're just like, okay, well, this is all just like fake, stupid. And in some cases,
sexist?
Like, yeah, exactly. It's
just sexist, like, racist, like all bad things.
All the bad things. Yeah, exactly. Like right below the surface. But yeah, like the way the people in the river stations in the book written 123 years ago talk, it sounds like a YouTube video about Elon Musk, which I thought was fucking hilarious.
No, the saddest part, it maybe Jordan just wants to enjoy a big, beautiful woman, but he just doesn't know how to. He's just like, you know, like, he's pushing against it so hard, you know.
Yo, dude,
he had a crush. He had a crush on a big girl at one point in his life. Which, hey, yeah. All the power to you. Again, I think him too. Bullied as a kid, I bet you.
She came over, and his bed wasn't made, and his room wasn't cleaned, and she left, and it scarred him forever.
Oh, damn, yeah.
It's like, clean your room.
Thick thighs ruin lives. He saw that Sports Illustrated magazine, it just broke his brain, because it's like the most recent episode started when he just like got too horny, I guess, when he saw that magazine cover, and it's been all downhill from there.
Yeah. And then he like loudly said that he's quitting Twitter, and then never left. I think for like a day he left or something.
He restricted everyone who can he doesn't see anything outside of people he follows. So he posts like his garbage.
Just screaming into the void, man. And, like, oh my God.
He posts his garbage so everybody has to see it. I'm not on Twitter. I don't see it. But, and then only sees his supporters' responses. But, and he's totally the type of guy who would be like, well, you shouldn't. If you can't handle the truth, then you shouldn't be a part of the blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, exactly. You shouldn't be a part of the discourse if you can't handle the truth. Yeah. But at the same time, don't be mean to me.
Yeah. Twitter makes normal people mentally ill. And this man is already mentally ill on Twitter. But yeah, if Kurtz had Twitter out in the Congo, 100% it'd be the exact same thing. So now we can move up in time to where Kurtz may have had a Twitter account. We can move up to the time of the creation of Spec Ops The Line. And it's like a very, very loose adaptation of Heart of Darkness. After playing through the game again and listening to the audiobook, Spec Ops almost feels like a fan fiction-y prequel in some ways, which like took heavy inspiration from the source material.
Okay.
Spec Ops is set in a modern, which at the time was 2012, Dubai, and follows three U.S. Delta Force operatives who have been sent to find and rescue Colonel John Conrad. So the name is, he's named after the author instead of the actual guy.
A homage.
And they also want to find John Conrad and the 33rd Infantry Battalion of the U.S. Army. The Delta Force guys are the player, Captain Martin Walker, who used to serve alongside Conrad in Afghanistan and use him as a hero. So again, now we already have he's idolizing the guy that he's trying to go find. Whereas First Lieutenant Alfonso Adams and Staff Sergeant John Lugo. So you're three very normal, very generic army men who do change quite a lot throughout the course of the game. It's very, very interesting to, especially now that I've beaten the game like four or five times, like I beat it in 3 hours, just in like two sittings. So like seeing the guys at the beginning who are just Call of Duty bros to just like the actors they chose are clearly phenomenally talented because it's straight up three different people by the end of it. It's incredible.
Wow. They did a good job with their Spec Ops The Lines that they read.
Yeah. Their Spec Ops line reading.
Spec Ops memorized these lines.
Yeah.
So, 6 months prior to the game starting, Dubai was rocked by a series of freak sandstorms that completely overwhelmed the city and completely burying parts of it.
There was such a confused look on Peter's face there.
Well, because, so I heard him just like for some reason come through as like, wait, back up, as in something had happened to the audio recording. I thought he was trying to stop me, so I was like,
wait, you gotta, Peter, stop, they rude.
Yeah. So if you guys want to take a look at what Dubai looks like underneath the African continent one, your second spoiler is available if you want to describe that to the listeners.
Yeah, it's like a city in the desert, but there's like sand up to like the top of the skyscrapers almost. Like it would be a very, very freak series of sandstorms.
Yeah, this kind of plays into how like some people theorize that the events of the game didn't actually happen because a lot of it is very surreal looking. But we'll get into that later.
It's just PTSD that these guys are going through?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. So the elites in the city of Dubai first told the world that everything was peachy keen before they fled the city with their pet tigers via helicopter, just leaving all of the poor people and the workers and also the 33rd just kind of stranded. So Conrad and the 33rd on their way back from Afghanistan decided to buck the chain of command and head to Dubai to help.
You know what? On the way home... If we should give you a funny middle name with an S in it, and then we could call you PTSD for like S and then Donahue, and then it's like PTSD is like your name. Like, PTSD.
My last name starts with an O.
Wow, we could skip that.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Although, dude, you're of Donahue. Come on. That's. Dottie is the last name. Like, the O is gratuitous. I've always thought you're a bit extra for it, but, you know.
Well, I'll tell my parents.
Dad, I'm dropping the O, okay?
What? Finally. Out of context at 4 in the morning, I'll call him.
Yeah. My friends keep making fun of me, and big girls shouldn't be on swimsuit magazines. And it's so mad. My room's so messy. Skank's probably out of control. I've got PDSD, Dad.
Yeah, Peter's standard definition right there. PDSD.
Okay. Yeah, it's when I have a breakdown about thick thighs in 4 8, basically.
Yeah.
So Conrad in the 33rd went dark up until 2 weeks before the game starts, when an SOS is detected stating that the evacuation was a complete failure. The writers, Richard Piercy and Walt Williams, chose Dubai because it is basically an already, like, a real world fantastical kingdom. Like, if you've ever seen anything that they've built there, it's wild. The skyscrapers allowed for the levels to feature a lot of crazy verticality, and the excess of Dubai itself allowed the artists to put in a lot of, like, gold and marble and these crazy hotels and all this, like, wild shit. They were making, like, a military shooter set in the desert, but they wanted to somehow make it more colorful, so they were just like, well, Dubai's in the desert, so we can still do our military shooter and then add, like, these crazy splashes of color, or, like, these interiors of hotels that have been buried by sand, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know the history of Saudi Arabia or the UAE all that well. I know they're terrible if we're talking about lists of, you know, horrible monster people. Like,
oh,
you know,
we can get into it, because that's my next point here, actually.
The Saudi princes are up there, but also, yeah, just, like, the comparison to the Belgians in the Congo, like, Dubai was built with slaves, like, yeah. Like, absolutely, Qatar was built with slaves, like, and it's, like, they have this thing where if you, yeah, so they have this way of recruiting slaves, today, Jamie, like, right now, where you'll go to Dubai, they'll accuse you of a crime, they'll take your passport, and then it's just like, oh, you're going to prison, and prison is work, so.
Yeah, and you gotta build a stadium for FIFA.
Yeah.
Their buildings are so tall.
Yeah,
yeah. It would take so long to build that by myself. It takes so long for me to build the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah, so
the pleasant part, though, is that they figured out how to control the weather. Have you heard this?
Yeah.
In Dubai, they have, like, technology that they can, like, today's going to be a rainy day, today's going to be a sunny day. So if you want your, I guess, since the slave unions say they can't work on rainy days, they could just make it sunny days.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry, you're a slave, but don't worry. You're never going to have to work whenever it rains in the desert.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we promise
you
that.
The weather.
Yeah.
So it's good that you mentioned that, because the next chunk I have here is, it was not expressed in anything I read because maybe it would be bad for marketing. It doesn't take a whole lot of lore boys canoning to see that Dubai is a modern monument to imperialism.
Yeah.
The area in the UAE had a Portuguese period, who have very infamous empire, a British period, who have an even more infamous empire, and then they had a ton of oil, and now is an independent but, like, cartoonishly opulent monarchy.
Is the Portuguese period anything like the Oxford comma?
It's the one with the dot above it. Yes, it's the dot with the comma is the Portuguese period.
Okay, yeah,
I understand.
It's when you put the period before the S, right? Okay. Instead of after the S. Yeah, exactly.
So not unlike the Congo Free State, Dubai has its own Wikipedia page called Human Rights in Dubai, which is a bad sign, but it, yeah. Like Qatar is one of those places where there's a lot of South Asian migrants, like from India or from Sri Lanka, where they show up, some trumped up charges, they take away your passport, and then you never get to leave.
Yeah.
When a lot of stuff
until you finish building FIFA's new stadium, basically.
Exactly. Or the second tallest building in the world, right? There was a whole other article that I didn't get into where it's just like during the COVID-19 pandemic, they shut down construction, but then the people they, like, owned, in quotes, didn't have anything to do, so they had, like, they'd relied entirely on food donations. But, like, yeah, Dubai is, it's a modern Congolese free state. Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing. History just rhymes, frankly.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't say what game or, like, any specifics, but I work in customer support for video games, and there's a lady in Dubai for a certain mobile game who had spent $2.5 million on this mobile.
Incredible.
Day. Yeah, just to be ahead of the pack. And it was like kind of like a more social type game with like weekly updates where you can get like different army upgrades and stuff. And it's designed that every single week, if you wanted to spend money, you could spend money kind of thing. So
in Farmville, Dubai, can you take away people's passports and like circumvent like the currency system?
That woman would be like halfway to getting max power in Diablo Immortal. She'd be almost there, honestly.
Yeah. Well, if you want to max out in Diablo Immortal, you got to steal so many fucking passports, dude. But, Jesus Christ. Yeah. This Dubai Twitch streamer stole 10,000 passports and still doesn't have a 5-star gem.
She was at the point where she would write us an email or like I didn't even work directly on this. It's like through like telephone game, but they would write in an email being like, hey, I didn't like this update. And they would just change the update for her.
Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Absolutely. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You make Jesus. Cool.
Yeah. That's where the money comes from. So,
yeah. Jeez. Well, I mean, it's money talks. That's it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a mobile game developer developing this kind of game, you're not in it for the artistic integrity that is making video games, right?
Yeah,
like,
no.
We can all agree. And like, hey, get your goose, you know what I mean? Like, no problem. Like, that's your business. But yeah. I'm not surprised that they're like, yeah, whatever you say, lady. Well, sure, you want that? You spend another $2.5 million? No problem.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, right? Like, that's going to pay for the changes 1,000 times over, like, basically. So a lot of what's going to come now is a lot of lore boys canoning about how like Spec Ops isn't much of an adaptation. It feels much more like a prequel, like I said, inspired by the source material. Because like, to be fair, there is no fucking lore for Spec Ops. Like the history of that game, it's just like 6 months ago, there was sandstorms. 2 weeks ago, we got a message from Conrad, and then the game occurs and ends. And like, and yeah. That's it. But its relation to like classic literature is the fun part.
Yeah, so, but Peter, you say it's a prequel. I didn't realize that Heart of Darkness was sci-fi, because you also said that Spec Ops takes place in 2012. So that must mean that Heart of Darkness takes place after 2012.
The Congolese had the highest midichlorian counts in the Belgian Empire. And when Anakin II, King Leopold, wanted a new Jedi.
Okay.
And that's why that whole place, that's all set in the desert. It's all in Anakin's
Tatooine.
Now we're doing... Peter does Jamie's explanation of Star Wars, having never seen it, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Tatooine
is the sandy one.
Got it.
So in Heart of Darkness, the further down the river Marlow ventures, the more sympathy develops for the natives. Like the further he gets away from the colony, the deeper he gets into like the uncharted lands. The more he realizes these people are human. Right?
Yeah. The more he starts to think that, you know what? That woman on that Sports Illustrated was beautiful. I don't care what exactly. Those guys said. Yeah. You know, like, she was gorgeous.
Even when they attack the steamship or a scene like onshore, like hooting and screaming at the passing vessels, he starts to recognize more like primitive, as he calls it. Of course, this was written 120 years ago. Like parts of himself that he also wants to dance around in the loincloth in the forest. And we'll get further down the river with Marlow after the break.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, welcome back, everybody. All right. So, prior to heading down the river, Marlow had overheard the manager of the first station that he was staying at the river, saying that Kurtz had sent a letter to him telling him to just leave him alone. However, after this, Kurtz had started shipping more ivory than anyone else and more than anyone had ever done. So the manager was just like, seems like he's gone crazy, but he's does good business. So
yeah, he's making me rich, so I don't care. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And when he reaches the station one that I had mentioned earlier, the heads on pikes, the man there tells him that Kurtz used to be at that station, but had completely lost his mind and now is participating in tribal rituals and is revered as some kind of deity. We had mentioned this at some point, and it's like a common saying. It's like, advanced technology seems like magic. Kurtz seems to have taken advantage of that before descending into madness and just joining the tribe. But because he, one, looked different and had crazy technology, he was revered as their, like, village god. And he was apparently even leading war parties against other villages to steal their ivory so that he could send more canoes downstream to the Belgian merchants, basically.
Wow. Canoes full of ivory.
Yeah.
Chill guy. Chill guy.
Yeah, I'll very drink cool magic guy. Rocks. Bullets, magic rocks. I'll drink to that, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
Sure.
So Marlowe, I guess to use an expression from the book, Marlowe never actually goes native throughout the story. He actually comes out more disgusted by imperialism and more sympathetic towards the tribes he encounters. On the other hand, Captain Walker in Spec Ops goes fucking crazy. Like, Walker as a protagonist has far more in common, in my opinion at least, with Kurtz than he does with Marlowe, which is why it feels like a prequel. It feels like you're playing the guy who went in and went crazy, opposed to the guy catching up to him.
Yeah, point of order. Going native is not going crazy. It's just, like, adapting the, like, it's going native. Like, what Kurtz did, minus the craziness, is going native. Like, living among the people and taking on their traditions and customs is going native, right?
Yeah. The expression used in the book, Walker in Spec Ops does not go native. I guess he does because it's just, like, a world of violence that he's going into. But he goes fucking insane. Throughout Spec Ops. Whereas Kurtz does go native and then go crazy also.
Okay, yeah. But Marlowe doesn't. Marlowe never goes native.
No, the protagonist of the story, of the original story, does not go crazy. He comes out of it just like, man, Empire's fucked up, and that Kurtz guy was very fucked up. Like, the most fucked up part of the Empire was Kurtz. Opposed to in Spec Ops, Walker goes fucking crazy, which is why after, you know, playing and then reading or listening to the audiobook in quick succession, Spec Ops feels like you're playing Kurtz. Because you're playing the guy who is descending into madness.
Into the place.
Into the part of darkness itself.
Yeah, hence your
prequel.
Your prequel comparison. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. More the representation of the Heart of Darkness itself rather than this Marlowe guy who's going to view the Heart of Darkness, which is what Empire has done both to the people who live in this place and the people who they have sent in to do that, right?
By the time Marlowe shows up, the heart's been darkenessed. Whereas in Spec Ops, you're darknessing the heart is pretty
okay,
much.
Okay.
Yeah. Is kind of the difference there, which is why I think it's a inspired prequel personally. You can't read the writer's minds, or maybe it's just like it's more interesting that way, opposed to just like walking through like a tourism, like a walking simulator of a ruined Dubai. But yeah, that's kind of my own theory there. So over the course of Spec Ops, we go from fighting desperate locals to fighting the American soldiers of the 33rd very quickly. We find out that the U.S. Army had a tough time fixing the problems, imagine that, and eventually just declared martial law over, like, Dubai and with the sandstorms. To enforce this, Conrad had the 33rd commit war crimes up until his command staff staged a coup against him. Sadly, the people within the 33rd who tried to stop him were defeated and burned to death using white phosphorus. This is a controversial but surprisingly not illegal chemical, mainly used defensively, so like smoke screens or smoke signals, because it burns very hot, but it also emits a lot of thick white smoke. So if you wanted to protect somebody with a smoke screen, you would use white phosphorus. Phosphorus, however, catches fire when it comes into contact with oxygen and has also been used offensively. If you guys want to open up the next spoiler there, it should be the bright black and white one.
What the fuck are you going to show us, Pete?
Yeah. Nothing real.
And here's somebody covered head to toe in chemical burns. Fuck you by the U.S. Army. I did pull up the white phosphorus wiki page, and there is like... use by U.S. forces in Iraq is a subsection on that page. So not far off the mark.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's probably why it's not illegal, frankly, because if anybody else used it, I'm sure it'd be on a list somewhere.
Yeah.
Delta Squadron is, of course, Walker, Adams, and Lugo. Delta uses white phosphorus against the 33rd. However, they unknowingly also kill dozens of civilians, if you want to open up the next spoiler.
I hate these queue ups.
Yeah, dude. I do fun fantasy art, and now we get just like a pile of melted flesh bodies from Spec Ops The Line.
The graphics aren't good enough to be overly disturbing. There's no blood. It's basically a bunch of skellies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a cool American in the back looking away, walking away.
That's from... Walker looking sad, man.
He's walking. Walker behind. Walking.
Wow.
Walking the spec ops line.
Yeah.
What's the line? I mean, that is the line, actually. Is the killing civilians is the metaphorical line within spec ops.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Well, they crossed it. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That, oh, yeah, you do. So we find out that the locals had been radicalized by our personal favorite tool of imperialism here on the show. Who are we talking about?
The locals have been radicalized by our personal favorite tool, Alex Jones.
No, the CIA. I guess
the CIA, of course.
Yeah. He might be.
We just watched that great 4th of July clip from Alex Jones. So.
So fucking insane. Yeah. So the locals have been radicalized by the CIA. In the hopes that the locals in the 33rd would simply destroy each other and all this unpleasantness in Dubai would just cover itself up. The CIA was originally sent in to find out what the fuck was going on with the 33rd and why they were gone for so long. Walker, so you the player, is eventually betrayed by CIA agent Riggs during a heist on the last of Dubai's drinkable water. At first, he tells Walker that he wants to steal the water to cripple the 33rd's ability to function. However, when the water trucks crash, when they're being attacked by, like, people trying to stop them from stealing their water, and it's all just, like, dumped into the sand and destroyed, Riggs just tells Walker that destroying the water was the CIA's plan the entire time. They never wanted to help, so that everybody in the city would just thankfully be dead or conveniently be dead within a few days, thus, like, sealing the Manila envelope once and for all.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. Cool guys, the CIA. Can we just say we don't give them enough praise, but cool, chill, normal guys, I think.
On that note of how cool the CIA is, I would also like to clarify that I am in no way suicidal and I love my life.
Yeah. Just I have no itch. When I die, I'm gonna be put into a coffin, not a suitcase. You know, it'd be weird if somebody were to find my dead body in a suitcase. That's all I'm gonna say. Mm-hmm. You know? Because if I was gonna suicide, I wouldn't do it by shooting myself in the back of the head twice and putting myself into a suitcase. I would never do that, you know?
I mean, I hate flying, though.
Exactly. Sedate me for the plane, but...
Yeah.
So after the water trucks crash, this little achievement-hunting trick for you, you do need to play through the game twice, or at least reload a chapter. There is a choice here, and two, potentially three achievements that you can get. Riggs's truck has tipped over, and he's kind of, like, fallen out of the driver's seat, and he's crushed under the cab of the semi, and then he gives you a gun, or you pick up a gun with one bullet in it. He begs to be shot in the head before burning to death because there's, like, oil spilling out. Doing so gets you one achievement and then another one later. However, letting him burn like he probably deserves and using the bullet on, like, this antelope later on gets you three achievements. One for finishing the chapter, one for the choice. You still get one whether you kill him or not. And then there's one called Big Game Hunter where you just use that bullet on, like, just you just waste it on a deer instead of putting this guy out of his misery before he burns to death.
Wowee.
Yeah, so the CIA doesn't really have an analog within Heart of Darkness. There's no third party in the novella that was sent ahead of Marlowe to see if Kurt, like, to see what Kurtz has been up to. There's, like, the Russian guy at that outpost that has the heads on pikes, but he's just working for, like, a different trading company, basically.
Yeah.
He was not sent ahead and, like, oh, yeah, Kurtz has gone.
Sent ahead.
He's got a few, actually. But, yeah, he's not the, he wasn't sent there to check in and then deliver bad news back to the outpost further downstream or anything like that. There isn't one there, like.
I don't think there needs to be, per se, like...
Yeah.
Like, the CIA is a very modern institution, right? Like, it wasn't invented, you know? Its precursors weren't really invented. Like, the police force wasn't invented whenever...
Certainly that was in the Belgian Empire.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, for them to not have a direct analog when, like, the CIA is its own metaphor in a lot of ways for, you know, the terrors of colonialism.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Like, Kurtz had notified people, basically, that, like, hey, I've gone crazy, leave me alone, I'll send you more ivory than you could possibly imagine, and obviously they were like, all right. Yeah. If anything, the only person who covers anything up is Marlowe, because he lies to his fiancée when he gets back to London about his last words, which I'll get into later, so, like, I guess Marlowe is the Fed this whole time.
Okay, sure.
He does the cover-up. The rescue party thing within Spec Ops has a lot more in common with Martin Sheen's character, Ben Willard, in Apocalypse Now. who is sent upriver in Vietnam to save an obese Marlon Brando's acting career.
Wait, it's Martin Sheen? I thought it was Charlie Sheen.
It's his dad.
Oh, they look alike, huh?
I hope so.
I was like, oh, okay, yeah. I was wondering why it didn't look exactly like Charlie. That makes way more sense.
Okay. he's either young or his dad.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And then obviously, like, Apocalypse Now is the much more famous and closer adaptation of Heart of Darkness. There's a lot more characters and there's a lot more events. Like, when, like, some of the members of the Riverboat get killed in Apocalypse Now, it's pretty close to the way the one character in Heart of Darkness dies, the ship pilot. He's not a slave, in quotes. He gets killed by a spear when like some tribe on the bank is just like attacking the steamboat. He opens the shutters and gets hit in the side with a spear.
Blood out from cutting off his dick to try and get rid of the dick fish or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They didn't have the proper medicine.
I really like the in Apocalypse Now. I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Dude wearing like the cowboy hat, no shirt, out on the beach during the
Killmonger or Kilgore or something like that.
Yeah. He's just like so like he doesn't know how to exist outside of war, and there's like bullets whizzing by his head and explosions.
Guy's surfing.
Yeah, he's like, get on that surfboard. He needs the chaos around him to feel alive or whatever. I think about that guy a lot. I don't think that guy is similar to me at all. Like, I'm so not the type of person who would want to be in that situation. But
no, if I was in that situation, I think I might be scared, honestly. Might be a little scared. Yeah.
Yeah.
So after the water heist, both Lugo and Adams are killed. This is in Spec Ops, of course. Some fan theories insist that Walker himself was killed and is currently in hell. So if you guys want to open the next spoiler tag, it's the orange one.
Okay.
Oh, Elden Ring, it's, bro.
It looks a lot like Sauron's tower that the eye is built upon in Mordor, or in Mordor.
Yeah.
And it's just like wreathed in fire, which I assume is like backlit by the evening sun sand, right? Yeah.
I mean, while the Burj Khalifa and I guess Minas Morgul have a few things in common, that is, or Barad-dûr is indeed the Burj Khalifa wreathed in flame. Nice. I haven't seen it in a while. I think it is. I can't remember. Anyway, there's a decent amount to support this in game that Walker, Lugo, and Adams are all dead, and this is just their own personal hell. When rappelling down the side of a building, at one point, there's a reflection of a hanged U.S. soldier. Behind the rope, like in the reflection on the side that Lugo is zipping down. Later on, he is lynched by an angry mob of people who are obviously angry at the three of them for crashing and destroying all their water.
For dooming them all to,
exactly.
to a death by dehydration, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It can't be a good one.
No. And then Adams dies off screen after pushing Walker to safety, allowing him to reach the Burj Khalifa. Other things that kind of hint that this place is just haunted or maybe supernatural, other than really the level design. Graffiti around Dubai seems to hint at things that have happened during the playthrough and changes. It also changes depending on like some of the actions you take. Like whether you shoot Riggs in the head or let him burn, there is different graffiti next to that deer thing that you can kill.
Okay.
So it does reflect the choices you have made, which, you know, is not super realistic, and that you'd have like this omniscient graffiti all over the city. Some of it even seems to predict the future in certain levels as well, just like the things that are painted on the walls.
Okay, so if you shoot him and you spare him burning, it's like the graffiti's like, oh, some people deserve to suffer. And if you don't shoot him and you shoot the deer instead, it's like 10-point buck go gear, big guy.
Yeah, there's one that's like some darkly philosophical thing, and another one is just like the guy who yells at you from the arcade cabinet in the movie theater from Big Game.
Yeah. There's Larry the Cable Guy saying "get her done" with two thumbs up graffitied onto the wall.
Right. That's one for the record books, like 10,000 points.
Larry the Cable Guy being there in any form, I think, is kind of some evidence that it might be hell, actually, like the fan theories suppose. So
one of the deepest rings, like the ring of treachery or whatever, where you're like waist deep in boiling tar, and there's a bunch of Larry the Cable Guys just like flying around poking at the bike stands.
Yeah, you're waist deep in boiling Larry's.
Yeah. It's just like this river of plaid and denim.
If you're burning for your, if you're burning eternally and being fucked by a demon, you just might be a sinner.
Yeah. All right. You should have done wanted to be a redneck, okay?
Yeah.
Isn't that a different guy who does You Might Be a Redneck?
Yeah, it's Jeff Foxworthy.
They all
the mustache suck. Guy.
Yeah. It's the blue collar comedy tour. There's the four of them. Yeah.
So throughout the game, the squad is harassed by a DJ, a radio DJ named Robert Darden, who was once a journalist embedded with the 33rd, and now he speaks on the radio on their behalf. He also seems a bit supernatural at times. He comments on things the player is doing, even though it's impossible that he could have known what they were doing, unless he was, of course, a character in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he even sarcastically comments, like, I don't know how real this comment is or how much this is for the gamer and not for Walker. When you actually interact with him in the game, he's just like, as if that's a real gun. Like, kind of commenting on how he's in a video game and seems to know it.
Okay.
Yeah. The DJ himself, he's based on Evan Wright, who was a Rolling Stone journalist, and he was embedded with the 1st Reconnaissance Battalion during the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq. Wright went on to write...
I thought you were going to say he was embedded with the Belgians in the Congo.
No.
Rolling Stone was a magazine?
Yeah, Rolling Stone is from the Belgian Congo. It's where
they beat Bob Dylan with that name by like 60 years, 50 years. Holy moly.
No, Evan Wright was with the U.S. military during the invasion of Iraq. He wrote Generation Kill, which was the article in Rolling Stone that was eventually adapted into the fantastic HBO miniseries of the same name.
Cool.
Which I've definitely talked about on Discord before, because I watched Generation Kill recently, and it's fantastic.
I feel like I've never heard of it.
It's good. I mean, it's like a black comedy, because it's all real. They're all based on real people. It's just like told from this journalist perspective who's like learning what it's like to be in the army, basically.
Okay. Yeah. In that particular era, I guess.
In that specific invasion as well, right?
I mean, speaking of what it's like to be in the army, like, I could see the radio DJ voice not being necessarily meta about video games too, but also being more meta, like, hey, Walker's just processing, like, in canon processing trauma, and he's like having, you know, these visions or whatever, and like the guy who got hung for the water truck, like, maybe, you know, they'd done something horrible in Iraq. And, you know, what happens to a lot of soldiers, they, you know, there's extremely high rates of suicide. So, you know, his friend and fellow soldier, like, having committed suicide like that and just kind of processing all these things with these, like, crazy visions. Hope it ends well for him, though. Hope there's, like, a nice rainbow and, you know, they turn on the Dubai rain generator at the end. And, you know, they all hold hands and, like, skip off into the desert.
Yeah, he's all burned by white phosphorus, and he's completely beat up. He's all shredded, and then he just like looks up into the sky, and it's like, raindrops keep falling on my head. It's just like the Dubai rain machine starts pouring down. He's just like, oh. So by the end of Heart of Darkness, Kurtz is brought to Marlowe's steamboat on a homemade stretcher carried by members of the tribe that he had been living with. He's sick, skinny, and pale. So I guess he has completed the third step of the Jordan Peterson arc where he's like in a coma in Russia.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's got nerve damage from a Russian doctor from eating meat only for 8 months or whatever.
Yeah,
he's sick, skinny, and pale too. Like Jordan's got that whole opiate addiction thing going for him, and those are usually three symptoms
So yeah, that's three. That's three for three. So that's what this book has actually been about, and it was written, you know, 70 years before that man was even born. And he's raving about what he like wanting to be left behind so he can recover and finish whatever plans he had, like this whole being revered as a god thing, like very clearly got to his head, which considering he is like an artist, musician, painter, and like, oh, he should be in politics as well, like the way he is described is he is all of Europe. He is like this fictional, not just an amalgamation of Jordan Peterson and Elon Musk, like he is every European elite in one body, especially at the time in the 19th century, like playing music and painting, and he's politics and he does poetry and he's a philosopher, like he's all these
things. Renaissance man.
How would you guys mix the Jordan Peterson and Elon Musk name? I think G-lon Peter Musk, that's pretty good.
G-lon P Musk. Don't give him the eater.
Muskerson's okay.
Muskerson, Edan Musk.
I mean, it could be like E-O. It'd sound like way too foreign. Yeah, it'd be like Jordan Muskerson, which is just like probably a regular Finnish guy somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Hey, they called me out on the show.
This was for you, Jordan. But yeah, like wanting to finish what he's started, and like his mission is so important. Like he's really more of an allegory for colonialism overall at this point, right? Where he's like sick and dying, and like, you know, the last gasps of a dying empire, just like in a stretcher being carried by these natives that he's completely brainwashed into believing that he's some kind of god.
That's it. It's like clearly dying, but still reveling in it, right? It's still thinking like, oh, this is the best. The way I did it is the best, when it's like clearly destroyed you and like utterly, right?
Yeah, it didn't just destroy the people around him or the people that they were, you know, pushing out of the way, like destroyed himself as well.
Which again, 120, 125 years ago, this was written, like
123.
And,
yeah.
Exactly. And here we are still withering, baby.
Just shuffling around at our desks.
It's the best. Capitalism's the best. You know what I mean? Like human rights are cool and all, and like having a fair society and things, like, but education is great. But like, imagine people getting rich, like not me, not us, not any of our listeners, but imagine like somebody else getting rich. That's like so cool.
That's
like
way cooler.
So happy that that's the way our systems are set up.
I wonder.
It's like super cool.
What like the general public thought of capitalism back then versus now, though? Because I feel like there's more of a chance for the everyman to kind of like at least get a house or like be able to feed himself. And
depend then, or define then versus now, because like they had the creation of unions and all this shit because people were burning cities down because they fucking hated it. You know what I mean? And now, unfortunately, with like military industrial complex and the fact that police forces are like way overfunded, they've made rioting kind of like impossible. And they've gotten a lot, like capitalists have gotten a lot more insidious with the ways that they oppress people, which is like in the States, like, why free healthcare is such like a political issue, and the Republicans are always going to side no, excuse me, is because if you are working for your health insurance, like if you're working so that you can go see the doctor in case you or someone you love gets sick, that means you can't strike. You can't lose your job. You can't upset the status quo, because if you lose your job, people fucking die. People that like yourself or people that you love fucking die for it. So like the fact that they've kind of set up this house of cards like that, and it's not just the States, honestly. I don't want like our American listeners to be like, oh, they're shitting on the States again. Like Canada has its own like insidious capitalist structures and all that. And we're, it's kind of worldwide.
Yeah, we're kind of Diet USA up here. We have a little,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
We got a couple things going for us, but it's still pretty much the same.
A lot of the exact same problems.
Yeah. When COVID first started, my wife's in a union. When COVID first started, they were doing like the union meetings, like virtually, obviously.
She's in a union with you for her whole life.
Yeah, that's true. Marital union. And the Teamsters. The Teamsters are involved. It's fucked up. No, but so she's at a union, and when we first went to work from home, we like went to COVID, and like even like unions nowadays, a lot of them, especially the bigger ones, are like so captured by corporate interests and by political interests and by like all these other things, where like they had their like union prez on, and he's like a nice guy, like seems like well grounded or whatever. But then they had this like other woman who's like, I guess, the liaison with like the local politicians, and like they were pissed. Their contract was like 3 years overdue, so they were 3 years overdue for a raise. And then they were like, the union was basically saying like, oh, we're gonna vote on whether or not we want, you know, X raise or whatever, and X raise was less than cost of living. And it's like, this is like, you should be getting like that on top of 3 years cost of living raise. And I remember getting so mad because this woman kept just being like, okay, well, guys, we don't want to like strike too much or like stir the boat too much, because like I got to work with these people, like referring to the politicians. It's like, you're the fucking union, man. What are you talking about? Like that is absolutely your job. You're probably making fucking 8 times as much as my wife is to do your job at the head of the union. Like, fuck off.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. Which like, hey, unions are great because like they can still strike. In Canada, they've made it illegal for teachers to strike in any kind of efficient way. And I'm you know, the voice, the devil voice of my wife here, that's like, you guys should all just fucking strike until they change the law that makes it not illegal, because that's how fucking strikes work. Like, what the fuck? Like, she's like, oh, well, you get fined $50,000 a day. Well, we don't fucking go back to work till they remove the fines. Like, what the fuck? Like, wow. They're going to crack eventually.
Jesus.
I'm sorry. I'm salty. Too much capitalism. Capitalism overdosing over here.
Yeah. We're almost done with the Empire. It's okay.
By the way, if you guys want to donate to keep the show going, the Patreon.
If you want to donate to keep Ethan's wife on strike, Patreon.com/TheLoreBoys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing
$50,000 a day, baby.
Yeah, we're doing an interesting incentive where we're comparing people's passports. We need you to send you our passports. Or we need you to send us your passports, okay?
We'll give them back, we swear.
Yeah, we swear.
And now that we figured out there's only one Lore Boys, too, we've decided to give out half the episode lengths at twice the cost. Because where are you going to go? There's no more girls out there.
Yeah. Oh, God, don't give them that idea. They'd be so much better than us.
Shrinkflation with podcasts. It's like 50, it's like the same amount of data, but it's 48 minutes now.
Yeah. We'll post
like the tapered, slim, sexy Gatorade bottles.
Yeah.
Not those thick bitch ones. Those ones are fucking disgusting.
Yeah, you never put a traditional Gatorade bottle on a Sports Illustrated cover.
No,
get out of here. This is not by any standard definitions of a beautiful Gatorade bottle. I'm sorry.
Yeah. The authoritarian left can't make me drink a liter of Gatorade.
You know what? Those water jugs are so thick, the CIA just sank them right away, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
The problem with the water trucks and Spec Ops: The Line is that they were too curvy. The CIA was convinced that it's the curviness that was driving the local population mad. But, you know. They were wrong for once. I mean, the CIA has only been wrong once, and it was that one time in Spec Ops: The Line.
The fictional ones in this video game.
Yeah, exactly.
So, just circling back here, so we can cap this one off. So the sick, skinny, and pale Kurtz actually escapes during the night off the riverboat, but he's too sick and weak to walk. So Marlo just follows the trail of flattened grass that Kurtz had like dragged himself over. He like basically left a snail trail of like flat grass on the way, trying to get back to his tribe.
I mean, yeah, like. I don't want to get like so metaphorical and like be the English teacher being like, oh yeah, you know, the blue signifies the fact that he was picking up Viagra. But it makes me think of a snake right away, right? Like just crawling through the grass, like can't even lift himself and like literally leaving like his little snake trail behind, which again is just like a bad image if someone compares you to a snake. That's like not a good look. Yeah.
And Marlo goes out there, he follows the trail, he's like, come on, Kurtz, let's get you off Twitter, and like, let's get you back on the steamboat.
Exactly, yeah.
What's the apple, what's the man, what's the rib that makes the woman, though, in this whole scenario?
The rib that makes the woman is the palanquin that Kurtz was carried upon.
Okay.
Because he convinced, so I guess the tribesmen are Eve, because they ate the apple and carried him on the palanquin, and he's the devil, the snake, right? So then I guess that makes Marlo Adam. Right, just only because he's the only one left, not because there's a good reason for it.
Because he's the hero.
Adam
he's the protagonist, so he should be the man.
On the riverboat journey back to the ocean, Kurtz finally dies, and his last words are "the horror, the horror." This is the part that transferred over into Apocalypse Now as well. Like, it's not that like what it's about is like, you know, again, it's because. Kurtz really is more of a metaphor than anything. It's the horrors of what they've done and the horrors of the things that he did to the people, to the tribe, and also to himself, obviously.
Yeah, the horrors of what he's become, right?
Yeah. And when Marlo meets Kurtz's fiance, he tells her that his last words were her name instead. So that's his CIA cover-up.
The whore.
Oh my god. Alternatively, in Spec Ops, when Walker finds Conrad in the penthouse of the Burj Khalifa, he's already killed himself due to the failures of the evacuation. And then the Conrad he's been talking to this whole time appears to be like hallucinogenic cope that he so that he could blame someone other than himself for burning all those civilians to death. So he starts talking to Conrad on this radio after killing the civilians. And there's like three different endings, like and Conrad kind of gives this big speech, this weird kind of ghost speech about how Walker did all this himself just because he wanted to be a hero and nothing else. It was like just this manifest destiny drive about the game. It's like because it's a video game, you're gonna go through and kill all these people to like regardless of get your squad mates killed, and it probably got you killed as well. So anyway, the game's three endings all kind of hint at maybe this was real, or maybe it was like a guilt-induced journey through hell, or maybe it was something else. But that is the part that I'm not going to spoil, because I still think, despite basically talking about the entire game and the book it was based on that Spec Ops is still worth playing. Heart of Darkness is really fucking boring. I don't know if I would recommend that audiobook, but like if you're into the like straight up the classics, it's 4.5 hours long. It's not the worst way to spend it, but it was a little bit difficult for me, despite being fun to write out.
I have a hard time clicking with audiobooks. If anything, I would give it a read, I think. But it is like a novella, so I do think it is short by most standards. So
yeah, well, it's like 4.5 hours total, so it's like shorter than Metro 2033, which is the last. It's not, well, I guess it's not the last. The last audiobook I did was A True Story, but it's you know, it's shorter than something like that. But
at barely 38,000 words, according to TheGuardian.com.
Very good. Yeah.
Spec Ops, the line is only $6.50 right now. It's 80% off. Holy cow.
Oh my god, Steam sale.
Yeah, might pick it up after.
Did we teach you nothing about capitalism and imperialism?
Yeah,
but it's on sale.
I'm gonna give 2K my fucking money to of all companies.
Yeah. Yeah. I do own it. I have played 78 minutes. I have 9 achievements. But I'm not a big shooter guy. So
yeah. Play it on easy for the story. Honestly, I think it's good. It's not hard overall. I've beaten it on the second highest difficulty, which unlocks the highest, which I never did. And even when I rebeat it, it was just on normal to get through it because I had to do the show.
Yeah.
But play it on easy if you're not a big shooter guy, and it is worth playing. But yeah, that's Spec Ops. That's Heart of Darkness. That's a sprinkling of Apocalypse Now and a whole lot of me, your host, Peter O'Donoghue. You can find me at on Instagram at Loreboys Podcast. Jesus Christ, I have no idea where I am. And you can see me at Montreal Comic Con on July 9th, 2022, if you'd like. You can check out merch linked below, Patreon linked below, and Discord linked below. Lads, plugs.
Jamie, you got anything you want to share with the class?
Hmm? Make like Elon's hair and plug, baby.
This is very good.
I just get the Discord. That's where I'm hanging out. Been buying up all these new games and stuff and chatting about them in the Discord. Also in the bonus content, if you're a Patreon sub, you'd know all about the stuff I'm doing. But if you don't want to pay, or you can't pay, or you just want to hang out, just come over to the Discord, because a lot of the same exclusive stuff's happening there for free.
Yeah, links for that are in the description of this episode, so you can just click on Discord to take you right to it. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to help the show, try telling your friends, try leaving us a review, 5-star on do it on Yelp. You know what I mean? Go to Airbnb and leave us a 5-star review on Airbnb.
And it's like, oh, fuck, this has all three of our addresses. How'd they do
that? Uber. We want to get that 5-star Uber rating. Obviously, Lyft, you know, all the good stuff.
Delivery care is the rating I want for when I drop off your cold McDonald's.
I'm a perfect handoff kind of guy. People cannot figure out how to get to my apartment, and it drives me nuts. So if someone does it, I give them an extra tip and a perfect handoff. They get 20% if they can find my apartment. Yep.
If you can navigate Jamie's rat maze to get into his apartment,
you get
a shiny tip and a piece of cheese.
It's just like a cheese triangle with like a toonie just jammed into it.
And I think that references to the Patreon bonus content for this week.
We talked about it a bit on this episode.
Okay. If you guys want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, like Jamie said. We have, you know, the aforementioned bonus content. We've got the loser titles. We've got the script that you can get your hands on with all the picture props that we added. So check on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/theloreboys if you're interested in that. Shout out again to Benny and Bray. Braybony.
It's starting to have like a decent library of audio, too. Like, if you guys join now, there's something like 20 or 22...
1,000 hours of content. No, that's not true.
No, they're anywhere between like 15 minutes to 35 minutes. So there's like an extra couple handfuls or a few handfuls of episodes there. So
very
cool. And it's growing all the time.
And of course, if you don't trust Patreon, we do have Loreboys Prime. This week, I did kind of hint to it a little bit earlier. We do need passports from you guys, okay? But it's not for nothing. Look, let me be honest with you. We got some work to do, okay? We are building a monument, but it's not a monument to the Loreboys this time, okay? It's a monument to someone near and dear, very special to our heart. You might say that we're working really hard to finish it. That's right. It's a monument to Jedrin Muskerson going up in the Great White North. We hope it stands as an obelisk. It's not going to look like him or anything like that. It's just going to kind of look a little eldritch. We're going to build it on the melting glaciers of the Arctic, because the Antarctic is just too far for us, honestly.
It is.
So yeah, we need you guys to send in your passports. We will rate your admissibility as one of our worker bees. We're calling them fun little worker bees. Buzz.
Before we get too far from it, you said Antarctic. You know what the Antarctic smells like?
What?
Penguin poop, because it's too cold for bacteria to break down the penguin poop properly. So anywhere, if you could see a penguin, it's going to just smell like penguin poop.
Smell like penguin poop forever.
Horrible. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. What does penguin poop smells like?
Oh,
smell
I don't
like?
Know. I've never.
That's my next question.
If it's minty, then I think that'd be all right. Yeah.
Roses really do smell like poo poo poo, as Andre 3000 said.
Outcast, I think. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's in there. One quarter Andre for sure, at least.
Yeah. I think that would cost you a lore boys.
Lore boys.
Lore boys.
Out.
Outcast.
A lore boys Andre 3000.
Like, I just silenced it so I could listen to an audiobook, but I really haven't turned it back up. It's not just, like, music. It's like a song. Like, there's this woman singing the entire time, like, in Japanese or in, like, the made-up Monster Hunter language or something. It is.
Japanese is just the made-up Monster Hunter language,
right? There is a made-up Monster Hunter language, but she's, like, singing. It's like a choir thing, so you can't understand it completely, right?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.